morning, good afternoon, good evening, good time, whenever you're listening to us. This is the Material Studies. That's right, you're sitting in a virtual classroom of sorts, listening to us through the ears on a new pair of headphones. It's connected to this newfangled centralized education system where everybody just has the same thing piped into their ears. That's where you are right now. And I am your professor, Florence Ion. I'm joined here by adjunct professor Andy Anacco.
Well, first of all, that indicates a desperate disparity in our pay. If I'm just an adjunct professor,
sorry,
I see
all
myself.
That came to my mind. Okay,
no,
that's
fine.
Actually,
that's fine.
Trying to rank you.
Don't mistake me. I was actually ranking myself, or at least defining myself. I see myself as like that other professor who like wears turtlenecks unsuccessfully, and like on the first day of class, he like says, "You know what? I don't think I should be up here at a podium." And he grabs a chair and then turns it the wrong way around and sits it the wrong way out. When I should be on your level, because we're all here as humans together. And you know, you don't have to call me professor. Call me just Rob. Okay,
oh,
and we're
no.
gonna go around the room and get in touch with
oh,
our feelings.
No.
And hey, if you kids ever want to rap,
be called Rob
with a because. You know, I get it. You know, I'm not one of those, yeah, et cetera, where he's like, oh my God, this guy is either the most evil power trippy person ever, or he is going to be so easy to take advantage of. Either way, it's going to be an interesting semester.
What a great thing that you just like pointed out, because I feel like it's very in line with what our theme is today in this very special bonus episode of the Material Podcast. This is Material Studies.
We should because we're kicking off Material Studies. This is such a big thing and such a thing we're both keen on that management was nice enough to fork over for a custom logo because this is sort of our discussion group. On a regular basis, we're going to find a book, a podcast, a movie, something that is very much Google related. We're not just going to simply say, oh my God, when Tandy voted out Argon, I'm just like, I'm never watching Survivor ever again. Like, no. I mean, well, we already do that for about 45
guys,
minutes before we start recording.
Those of you who have been listening to us for a long time, those of you who are new, hi, welcome. It's very nice to have you here. But those of us who have been listening for a long time, I got him. He's starting to do the reality TV references. Do you see what's happening, people? It only took me 3 years, but I got him.
Okay, well, you didn't get me so much as like when I do part of my morning after I get my
morning
comics.
I know you liked
comics.
It before me, but I still got you.
No, that's fine. No, that's fine. It's just that when I see what gets me interested when I see just like an entertainment news story is a reality TV person. And really, really embarrassing, like self-inflicted legal trouble. And the picture that they choose to run with the story shows a heroic amount of fillers, plastic surgery, makeup. That gets my attention. I will click on and read that article. And we did have one of those this week. So, yes.
Listen, okay. The other thing about Material Studies is we're supposed to be how shall I say, a cheese and cracker with fancy olive serving of material versus the usual smut that we are on the public RSS feed. Because we are very smutty, okay? You want to
Bottoms. Derriere.
So smutty.
Ooh,
okay,
I can't
so
be stopped.
I had to say that to myself to remind myself not to take the bait. Just for the Material Studies, though. So we are a book club in MP3 format, but of course, book could be any sort of medium that we are consuming these days, audio, movie, or picture, film, whatever. You know what I'm talking about. So we are dissecting and digesting Land of the Giants, a 7-episode podcast that just finished on the Vox network. So Vox, owners of The Verge, Polygon, they have their own podcast network, and they teamed up with Recode when they took over Recode, right? Mm-hmm. And they sort of amalgamated podcasts, and they've had this great series, Land of the Giants, which started by covering, I think, Netflix and Amazon,
yep,
and then Google's the third season.
Season 3, yeah.
Yeah, and
This is a really, really great series that I had to get caught up with it over the weekend, but yeah. I can't recommend this highly enough, because there are a lot of podcasts that attempt to like tell the history of something, but there are very few that treats it as though there's an ongoing central story to be told in the history of a large tech company. So it's not as though they got together and say, okay, well, what are we going to do next? It's got to be either Apple or Microsoft or Google. Let's do Google. Okay, 7 episodes. Who wants to do, YouTube? We'll talk about YouTube influence. And who wants to do how they put the search engine together? You know, it's not that sort of a thing. It is, we have a 7-part story to tell about the history and the culture of the company and why they make the sort of decisions that they do. And oftentimes, I just finally listened to the final episode of this series, the Google series, this afternoon, and they were calling back to stuff that they were talking about mm-hmm. in the first episode, and not in the annoying like Marvel Cinematic Universe thing where I have no idea what they're talking about because I haven't consumed absolutely everything this company has ever produced, but because putting it together that Sundar Pichai had an attitude when he first joined up, and that has influenced decisions that have been made. There's a nature to Google that formed all of its early decisions, and some of its current problems are due to the problems of getting that original attitude to scale as they move from 50 employees to over 100,000. So you really do feel as though you're being given a good base coding of understanding of Google that will help you understand and help you to parse other information and other news stories that come out and other products that come out in the future.
I had brought this up to Andy when we started listening to the podcast. I initially had a bit of a criticism, which I later started to understand the bigger picture, you know, because sometimes you start a series, the first couple episodes are a little slow, you're not really sure where it's going, and then it sort of like just takes off and you're immediately taken into the story. And that's what happened with this podcast. So I want to, you know, take away from this being a criticism and just say that, although I guess we are critics. but anyway, at first I thought this was going to be just like another, it sounded to me, and maybe it's my, I don't want to make light of PTSD, but for some reason it's the only terminology that is coming to my brain. I'm sorry, but it gave me little pangs, I guess I should say, the pangs of the early tech industry, the world that I came into in 2010, okay, as like a young, fresh out of college student. And it made me feel really uncomfortable because I was it was very easy for me to sop up whatever was being sort of sold to me at that time, because I was just so excited to be among all these giants, right? And I felt that when I started the podcast. And so I was kind of like, tuning in and out as I was listening to it. And then during the YouTube episode is when I really started to turn around and feel like, okay, they're really going to start digging into it. And by the 6th and 7th episodes, I felt very satisfied by the entire conclusion, to the point where I was just like writing down quotes. Just like, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Oh my God, preach. Yeah.
That's such a good point, because that's another problem that I often have about podcasts about Apple, about Google, about these companies, is that oftentimes it feels as though the commentator or journalist or whoever is being a little bit autobiographical. That they'll talk about Apple I could have worked at Apple and if I had decided to apply. And now I would be designing iPhones and iPads, or you know same the other way around, that they're sort of, oh well, they're not so great, I could have done that if I had finished college and done something with my life. This is a problem that I think is infiltrating a lot of tech commentary and tech journalism, where you have a lot of people who feel as though, hey, I'm part of Apple because I talk about Apple and I review Apple products, or I'm part of this whole reinvention of the world, changing the world through technology, because again, occasionally I do a YouTube video in which I share my opinions on certain things. And it's a lot like how movie critics should not get so friendly with actors and directors, and business reporters should not get, thank you for your offer of flying me in your corporate jet to this event. I think I will fly Delta Economy because I really don't want to get to know you all that well. Unless the point of the flight is to give me a 30-minute private talk with the CEO that is completely on the record, in which case I will reimburse you for the cost of a one-way Delta flight.
Yeah. You know, getting into this too, I was learning some things. I think because I wasn't around at the time paying attention to this when Google was starting. I mean, I didn't know about Google until my 10th grade history class. I was in history and the history teacher told us to use Google. I think up until that time, I was using Yahoo a lot because, you know, you remember Yahoo and AT&T had that deal for DSL. And so we had DSL through them. And, you know, there were a lot more search engines on the market back then. And so Google wasn't really on my mind until later. And so hearing all that early, I don't know, it was cool. I really appreciated the context, but it also made me feel a little weird because it just put me back into that space of, I used to be really excited about this until I saw the truth.
Yeah, but there's also the importance of context here that I laugh there because like I lost when you said first time I heard of Google was in history class. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so old that they're teaching about Google and as a history thing. But no, of course not.
No. It was because my teacher told me go Google that. It was the first time I heard somebody say that phrase, and I was like, I remember writing it down in my notebook like Google. Right.
How many O's in Google? But it was a while before you spelt it like Google as opposed to Google. But you have to be in Gen X or older to understand what the internet was like before Google and what a big deal Google was. They weren't this big behemoth that decided to snatch the power and control of the internet. They had fixed that they didn't just simply come up with a successful product. And this is something that I think episode one or episode two talks about how the early days there was, if you needed to find something on the internet, there were some search engines that didn't really work at all and whose search rankings could have been influenced by, oh, well, we have sold the number one search result for this to this car company. We have sold the number one result to this. Or you have, I'm not joking, a hand-built like Yellow Pages type directory where people have just simply typed in URLs. Or again, I think the Yellow Pages actually did have companies, oh, well, we're building our web directory, and for only $10 per month, we'll put you in our web directory. And they came up with this amazing way. Yeah, that so that it was problematic because it was never going to be in any way a good overview of the internet, but also because the implication was going to be that you had to be in the know, you had to be a business, you had to have money in order for whatever something you posted on the web to become found and known. Whereas part of what Sergey and Brin thought were the big win of their new algorithm was that it didn't matter if you had just posted this one article and that's the only thing you ever did in your life. The fact that you have created an article that explains here is how to fix any car that runs on a carburetor. And you've just done it so well that everybody is linking to it. The fact that there are so many links to it implies that it must be pretty good. And so on that basis, you are the number one responding link, even though you're not making any money off of it. This wasn't a business. You didn't pay anyone for that ranking. And the idea of searching the actual web, meaning that here are indexes of every page that could be found by a piece of software. And not only that the first results that you would find would be based on how popular these links are, as opposed to some other criteria. That was a transformative thing. This is a lot like cracking the power of, well, how do we transmit electricity across a long distance? It wasn't just, hey, Pepsi is a pretty good product. We came up with this thing called Coke, and we hope that we can like steal market share by being a more ruthless business. It was, no, this was something that I gag on things when I use the phrase change the world, because my God, the number of people in tech, usually just white, dull men, engineers who have no idea what the world is like, saying, oh, I want to change the world. But this is something that really did. So this is the sort of context that I think that people who are younger than Gen X, who weren't around like in the early 2000s, need to understand, particularly the ones who are now legislating Google, who are now legislating these companies.
Oh my God. You're bringing so much to my mind that I'm just sort of overwhelmed by like all these thoughts I have. Let's see, where do I want to start? I want to start by saying that you're absolutely right, that the podcast did a really good job of laying that foundation of why Google was so important, that first episode. And I think for the same reasons that it made me cringe a little bit, it needed to be like that, because people need to learn about that impact at that time. Because I think a lot of people don't stand back and think about the rise of when tech companies sort of really came to in sight of them. God, what word am I trying to think? Whatever, visible to them. Anyway, the second thing is that this series also made me think a lot about how this is going to inform my own way that I look at the Google News going forward. Because the way it ended was very much like, here's where we are now. Like, we've just given you all of everything that's been going on from beginning to present. And here's what we have to look forward to. We ended, by the way, on the antitrust court battles, the trouble that Google is in. And I have to say that my favorite episode was the second to last one, the Googlers versus Google. That was a really good episode.
Yeah. Like all the episodes, they're talking to people who were frontline and involved. When they couldn't get an interview with a key person, they found a public appearance they made in which they talked about this and got access to that. So it's a fallacy that you need to get both sides of every story, because sometimes there really is only one side of a story. But throughout this series, where there are a lot of dynamics involved, it's nice to know that we're not hearing an editorial spread out over seven episodes. They're trying to present, here are the facts as known, and here are the perceptions of those people who are actually involved. And you're right. I mean, just like I'm scrolling through the list here to find, it's in reverse order here.
By the way, we are linking to the Pocket Casts link for the Land of the Giants. Shout out to Russell, former host of the Material Podcast.
Yeah, and, solidarity. Googlers versus Google, which this is more one-sided, necessarily one-sided, because it's hard to defend how Google was doing with Dr. Tim Gebru and others. But this is the sort of thing I'm talking about, where the episode preceding it is entitled "A Military Contract Tests Google's Open Culture," and it talks about how, after building upon earlier episodes about here's the culture in which the founders wanted it to be, like a college campus where doors are unlocked. If you wanted to see if someone was working on something interesting, you could just lean in the doorway and see what was going on, metaphorically speaking. And the incident with Project Maven, where Google went into a contract with the military about using some of their AI tools for a part of the military's drone program, and how this culture of, well, look, this is a corporate culture in which you are encouraged to talk about other people's projects. And getting into that episode got into how it really started to become a point of transition where this company that could easily do things like that when they were a small company. Like, absolutely. No, if you have a problem, absolutely ask us about it, talk about it. You know, you are, everybody's here as one discussion group. But now when one group is saying, when there's a controversial piece of work and one group is saying, no, it's absolutely inappropriate that we do this, I insist that we never do anything with military contracts ever again. How do you navigate that as a company, saying, well, actually, we don't think it's as cut and dried as that. And frankly, you are like a third year engineer, and we've been running this company for like 9 or 10 years now, and we don't have to turn down these contracts just because you say that we shouldn't. But what I'm getting at is that the apparatus. So, and as we know, they backed down from Project Maven and also introduced like a AI prophetically AI ethics, and here's how we're going to use AI like in our business, right? But the next episode, talking about all the strife between Google management and its employees, was talking about how this Project Maven thing created the infrastructure that was then used to make it both embolden people who had not been listened to before, to organize, to use these new avenues, let's say, of communication, and also this new empowerment to say, well, we're not just going to have this on a nice, tidy family message board. We're going to leak to the press if we feel as though we're not being listened to. And that's what I'm talking about, where nothing in this series exists in and of itself, just as though no one incident in a long history is totally coming out of the blue. And anybody who is, we're just coming off of Easter weekend. A lot of people have, it's Monday. They spent Sunday with their families, including family members maybe they haven't seen since Christmas. We all know that if somebody decides that, oh no, well, I took half the cake for my family because, you don't need to take any home because, you know, you don't have kids. You know that wasn't an isolated thing. There are stories that built up to that. If I can.
God, I feel I'm getting upset. Just like,
sorry. But that's why I feel as though there's a lot of protein in this series.
Yeah, you know, that you bring up a really good point. I will say that they didn't cover the contract workers in the Googlers versus Google, but not for no reason. I mean, they made a mention of it at the end. It's like, this is a whole nother tier of things that we could have brought. I think it was very important to do specifically Googlers versus Google. That is the full-time engineers who are trying to make waves, who are bringing this idea of like organizing into the company and how that is like how the company is responding to it. It's all out there in the open. I have to say, it's also like validating in a way. The more stories come out about what is happening at Google, because as these stories pick up more steam, more websites, more publications, more podcasters are going to talk about it and write about it and cover it. And that means that this stuff will no longer stay as silent as it's been.
Yeah.
And that's very important. And so I really, really appreciate that the series covered so intently. That was the most intense. It was the sixth episode.
Absolutely. And it actually, another thing is just, it's just occurring to me that, because the podcast put this included within the context that this was a company in which historically they have said employees, we're having message boards to talk about anything that you want to talk about. And we are designed upon an open campus. It started to make me think about how, yes, it's Google is responsible for a lot of really, really bad treatment of employees and unequal treatment of its employees based on race and gender and all kinds of other issues. In addition to those thoughts, it also made me think, what's the situation inside of Apple, inside of Facebook,
inside
of Microsoft, where we would like to think that they're doing very well, but are they just simply better at keeping a lid on internal strife and punishing people, intimidating people into saying, look, you work at Apple, you get to work on the iPhone, you go home for the Christmas and everybody's so proud of you because you graduated college and now you're working for Apple, a company that even your grandmother knows about. Why are you, what kind of an ingrate is going to complain just because you've been stuck in management, in a non-management position for 3 or 4 years and white people, white guys underneath you have been promoted over you? Enjoy your pictures, your selfies from the Apple campus, and shut up.
I want to say something about the last episode. I know we kind of jumped ahead here and just sort of are going backwards in time, but you know, I promise we'll get to it. They were presenting sort of the both sides of the congressional hearings. And Andy, I know you, so Andy does an amazing job every week of doing our notes, of putting our notes together, which I really appreciate because Andy's notes are incredible. And see, Andy is the person that you want to cheat off of in a test. Okay. So I'm just going to put it that way. He's the person that you copy your homework from at lunch. And
I will,
so
I'm not a pushover though. I will insist that you not dump my books in the South Hall staircase. That's a good trade as far as I'm concerned.
And so I didn't actually listen to those congressional hearings when they're happening just because it's, oh my God, it's a lot. And I just tend to read a lot on it. And so when I was hearing some of that audio, okay, let's see here in my notes. What did I say? So they were talking about DoubleClick, the story of DoubleClick, how it all came to be, basically how Google started monetizing its search engine. And again, that was a lot of stuff I didn't know about, right? Because that all happened when I was a baby. Sorry, Andy, but I'm relating this to me a little bit too.
Excuse me. We have had too many conversations about your love for Aaron Spelling nighttime dramas. You said, ooh, when Beverly Hills 90210 was around, ooh, you were just, you were a gleam in your mother's eye. Like, I'm just saying, if I have to admit to being like a fully functional, nearly middle-aged person when I first started hearing about Google.
Sorry, I'm just. I guess I'm just trying to explain why I didn't hear it, just in case somebody goes, "What do you mean?" Like,
I'm
just like, "Listen, I was a baby. I was not concerned with this stuff." Okay,
you're more innocent. It was a more innocent time.
Well, I wasn't innocent. I was probably drinking alcohol when I shouldn't have. But look, I went to Christian high school, so
okay, exactly.
You had to. Anyway, I did LOL when. Okay, let me think about how to structure this. So there was the conversation from a conservative politician, the Republican regulators, and there was a quote where they were saying, there's no reason for Chrome to be connected to a mapping system or to the cloud. And I very much was like agreeing with that. But then they brought up the fact that Apple, Google, and Facebook, the platforms, they were saying, like, we don't want to allow conservative thought on here, blah, 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 go start your own platform. So they went and started their own platform, and then it was turned down from Parler, Google and Apple. Yeah, Parler. And I kind of thought about that, and I was just like, damn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that is a very strong argument against... I'm trying very hard not to vilify anybody. I'm trying very carefully to choose my words. But I was thinking about, I was like, that is a very strong argument for that. That's where I was on that. And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to think more deeply about it. And, you know, a lot of what this podcast did was made me rethink. I want to get to the YouTube episode in a second. But at least here, it started to make me think about how I want us to stop relying so much on tech being the basis for society, because that is not actually fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, if we fix the problem at its core, then the deplatforming would not be such an argument against being deplatformed.
Yeah.
You see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. I thought you were going to mention that. Because that was there were a lot of interesting quotes from that episode, and probably because I was in this, well, let's really think about like all points of view here. What one of my reactions was, well, I would kind of like to be like prepping this this congressperson saying, well, Chrome doesn't have to have a connection to Maps, it doesn't have to have a connection to advertising, but here's the benefits to the user of having a unified experience across all platforms. Also, things like Parler, it's interesting that we're talking about it today because the Supreme Court handed down a whole bunch of decisions today. And one of them talked about a lawsuit against Trump. You might remember that a few years ago, Trump was sued saying that, hey, look, you are the president of the United States. You are the government. And so as a result, you can't block me on Twitter because if I can't read your tweets, that is it's a violation of my First Amendment rights to be able to hear what you're saying, hear what my government is saying, and also say something back to my government. And that finally got made all the way to the Supreme Court between being kind of shut down for legal reasons. But the reading the decision today, there was an interesting argument from a justice that I traditionally I'm not very fond of, but he made the very interesting point that if we're saying that he at least pointed out that there's a contradiction in the fact that we are saying that Twitter is an independent, non-governmental, non-utility, just a private company that can basically have something in its terms of agreement saying that we can close your account for any reason whatsoever. Okay, and that's the basis upon which we are judging it as just a simple entity, like a newspaper. On the other hand, they have the power to deny the president of the United States access to its platform and not even necessarily have to explain why they chose to do that. So that would indicate that they have the power of a utility, so that maybe we should consider how the First Amendment works on organizations that have so much control over the connection between an individual and the public. That's the sort of stuff that becomes really, really quite interesting. It was a great episode overall, because there are a lot of these questions. It just really brought to the surface a lot of these questions that all of us keep kind of churning over and over again. Like whenever I'm thinking about or discussing, should Google be broken up, or should these companies be not allowed to become so big that they can buy any company that's coming up and terminate it, or just basically compete it out of existence? My overall thought is always, I'm not opposed to that, but tell me what problem you're trying to solve, and then tell me how breaking up Google is going to solve that problem. And I think that this episode kind of got into that a little bit, where this was an episode where you do have to point, both sides do have excellent points of view, and you can't really declare one the winner. You can just simply say, here are the borders of the landscape and the terrain as we know it, and this is a good choice. This is a great choice for the final episode, because we have nothing to follow this up with, because we don't know either.
Yeah. Nobody knows what's going to happen next. I was laughing a little bit, just in a sort of like ugh way, about the little interview clip that they had with Eric Schmidt, where I forget who it was from Wired, but he was saying, this is a gorgeous story about Google and antitrust. And Schmidt says, what's beautiful about this? They're wrong. Come on, give me a break.
It's beautiful. He said, the interviewer was saying, it's kind of beautiful that Microsoft is like after you on antitrust. Like, what's beautiful about it? It sucks.
Like, these are people who lost, essentially calling those people sore losers. And then there was this conversation about how Larry Sergey, as they are called in the beginning of the podcast, which I think is fair, they start to talk about how they really believed that everything they were doing was valuable for social good. And there was this discussion that they were able to grow because there were no checks and balances. There was nothing to balance their growth and their trajectory upward. And, you know, another part, Andy, just to kind of round off my notes here, is Cicilline. That was towards the end of the last episode.
The lawmaker from
Rhode Island, yes. I was going to say Maryland, but yes, Rhode Island. He was making this rationale that to get more technology companies and to help the next great idea to enter the market successfully, quote unquote, is to make it easier for, or make it harder for these big giants to sort of like take them over, right? Like Google. And I wrote a note to myself asking sort of openly or rhetorically, is this altruistic capitalism? Because then Cicilline says the note about we need to save capitalism. It was not Cicilline. I think it was somebody else, but they were quoted as saying that we need to save capitalism and like make it so that it's attainable for any person. And so, yeah, I just wanted to posit that question. Is this altruistic capitalism that they were trying to suggest?
Yeah. The other stuff that gets me concerned whenever that forcing Alphabet to divest or split the connections between its divisions is brought up, saying, are you going to be making it easier for small companies to establish themselves and prosper, or are mm-hmm. you simply going to be make it easier for Facebook to grab more mm-hmm. of the market, or for Apple or Microsoft or Amazon to grab more of the marketplace? So those are the things that I worry about. I do think that the current situation with these large companies is not ideal, but I think that the situation that we will wind up with is also not ideal if we split them up. We just have to decide which tablespoon of cough syrup we are more willing to swallow, and just move forward and deal with it. But there's definitely a lot to unpack here. But I thought that the Moonshots episode was another one of my favorites, because it was so nicely put together. With the first half talking about Google Glass, and yes. really, and I liked it a lot, because I have an idea for not necessarily a podcast, or not necessarily a YouTube channel, but a series of policy statements I would like to make that would be sort of sarcastically say, that's that, now let's hear no more of this. Mm-hmm. And I have a list of like topics I would attack, or excuse me, that I would do here. One of them being that the idea of the Death Star having a vulnerability in the form of that thermal exhaust port is not a stupid thing. It's not a fatal flaw, and here's why. But one of them is Google Glass was not a dumb idea. It was not a failure, because of my point of view of. It was always labeled as an experiment. One of the things that I remember distinctly about when they first started talking about it is that we need to get a whole bunch of information about not only how this thing would work when people are using it in daily life, but also how people who are not using it, who encounter these people, how are they going to react to it? And on that basis, I see it as an experiment. But this, and so I was kind of anticipating, oh wow, this is one of the dumbest tech products ever, Google Glass. I can't believe it. Stupid, god, again, embarrassing. And I thought, but it was very, very nuanced in that it talked about the birth of the concept and what they were going for, which makes it sound very, very good that this wasn't, hey, let's throw some crap at the wall and see if it sticks, or hey, let's mm-hmm, let's have a bro mm-hmm, toy mm-hmm. for people to show off like how tech savvy they are. But it also went into a lot of details that a lot of dynamics that I hadn't really considered before, including someone who they interviewed who was talking about how Kara Swisher was told a great story about being at some sort of being invited to some sort of a Google party. And talking about how that there's this delicious big like pile of jumbo shrimp that like nobody was eating.
Oh, yeah.
And so she was just there enjoying like at the buffet, just enjoying all these really delicious shrimp, looking at all these people who worked at Google who like had all of them like were showing off Google Glass to each other and taking pictures of each other. And here's a quote, like, I remember thinking, these people are idiots.
But can I just say, inside baseball though, Andy, how many I can count on my fingers and toes how many times I've been in that situation where I was just eating the free food, watching all the people.
Oh yeah,
I've definitely done that at Facebook a bunch of times.
You're not a real food. Journalist unless unless like you said, okay, I think this is good. This Microsoft event is going to be interesting new ideas about where they're going with Microsoft Surface. Also, the last Microsoft event I went to, they had three different sandwich kiosks with like one was meat and seafood, one was vegetarian, and one was cold cuts. So, okay, I'm definitely going to this one.
Yep.
But the other thing that they were, but the more important thing, again, the thing I hadn't really thought about was that they're talking about people who are more thoughtful and active saying that, well, look, and because this was a $1,500 device and because it really wasn't tuned into how normal people react to tech, this was something, if this was something that you have to be, I'm speaking as a Google Glass owner, so I'm trying to disavow myself of this paint, but hey, you have to be like a wealthy white male nerd who isn't really connected to real society, who thinks that technology really is the future in order to get these. And you have to also consider on top of that, that there are a whole bunch of communities that if you're non-white, your history is one of being surveilled upon all your life and being watched and being watched out.
Which is why people got punched out when they entered bars with it in San Francisco.
Right. Because right. So here on a more enlightened company might have had some discussions and considered that, does this look like, again, more wealthy white tech bro dudes who get more power over people who are not white male tech, rich tech dudes.
Enlightenment. God, it's so funny too, because the way that Larry Sergey were sort of positioning themselves were these enlightened people in the sea of just like sameness in Silicon Valley. And so here they were coming through doing something that was whatever.
Yeah.
I have to be very honest with you, Andy, that this was actually my least favorite episode.
Okay.
But not necessarily because of I just want to again say that what I'm saying least and most favorite, I'm really talking about the content, not so much like we're not here to judge the production of this because, you know, but the content here for me, it just brought me to a dark place for Google because I very much remember 2013, 2014 when Google Glass was, you know, just really coming into the world and there's so much happening at Google in the consumer space. They were doing Android Wear. They were pushing out all these devices. Like Samsung was just churning out like phone after phone after phone. It was a really busy hustling time. And then this was happening. And I feel like this is what derailed everybody. This moonshot chasing, this like going for the sky all the time instead of focusing what's back down on Earth.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that they would have gone a little more in depth on the Chrome and Android wars. But I understand that for the narrative of this whole podcast, like what they were really talking about of Google being this giant, what they chose for that episode was the most important component for what they were, you know, trying to prove with their narrative kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I really do think that we need to like talk about Android and the hardware trajectory. Like there was no discussion of the hardware trajectory for Google, the consumer hardware trajectory. We didn't really talk about the Pixel phones or the smart home, you know, situation and the way that Google is sort of like packaging the self as this like family favorite, you know, this new family member kind of thing. I feel like that, you know, maybe would have benefited a little dissecting of that and adding that to this narrative because I feel like that's part of it. We're bringing the Google Assistant into our homes this way very, very comfortably.
Yeah, they didn't really talk much at all about the Google Assistant.
No.
But I can understand why they wouldn't talk much about hardware, because it's hard to pinpoint any real success they've had in any sort of a hardware product.
That's also true.
Yeah.
Everybody else has pinpointed success,
yeah, exactly.
Hardware success on Android, but Google?
Yeah, this was where it's the point of it's our point here to editorialize. It wasn't the point of the show.
You're right.
of the podcast to editorialize. So that's why a lot of the stuff that was in that last episode about antitrust, I'm hearing a lot of lawmakers say things that kind of make sense, but that I just can't agree with. And of course it went unchallenged because it was more of an opinion sort of thing. And I'm talking about, I forget who was talking, but I believe it was a lawmaker who was talking about, oh, now Google has this stranglehold of the phone market with Android and telling people that if they phone makers, that if you want to use our operating system, you're going to have to pre-install all of our apps. And this is me like in my living room, like, I am alone, so I can speak back to the Google Home speaker that was playing the podcast. That, well, no, it's a completely free and tested operating system for mobile devices that they don't have, that Samsung and all these other companies don't have to develop for themselves. If they don't want to install Google apps on it, they're perfectly free to do that as well. And as a matter of fact, there are major companies that have either been unable to or unwilling to use Android who have decided to build their own forks that have nothing to do with Google at all. So it's that one of the least satisfying podcasts or books or editorials or whatever are the ones where I wind up just nodding and say, this person gets it. Oh boy, this is, I want to PayPal you some coffee because, oh, you totally get it. I really want someone to introduce me to ideas that make me say, well, wait a minute, that's not right. But then I'm forced to sort of think about why maybe that's not right.
I hope we do that for people.
I hope so.
I hope that's why you're paying money right now to listen to this podcast, because this is some members only. Sorry, you just took me there.
But yeah, I guess at least listen to the first episode, because it really does lay the groundwork for the series and for the company that really does make you really does. It won't change how you feel about Google. It might make you understand how it works a little bit better. Like how the first when PageRank was just possibly a thesis project, and Sergey and Brin were thinking about, were faced with the decision, okay, do we publish this as a thesis, as an academic paper to the public, or do we use this to start a product and start a company? And whereas current Silicon Valley culture is, oh my God, we could be gazillionaires if we build this as a company. And that certainly might have been a factor. But the episode makes the point that their idea was that, well, look, if we publish this as a paper, this can be used by pretty much anybody to do good things or bad things. If we do this ourselves, we can make sure this is a way that it makes all the world's information easier to find, easier to index, and democratic without being, again, that one person who does that one web page on carburetor rebuilds is number one search ranking, despite their not knowing or caring that this thing is actually on the internet. One of the most fun stories from that, again, showing that there's a story and there are characters that have their story arcs. They're talking about one of the first business meetings where they're making money by selling search to like individual websites, like news sites, that, hey, we will make the contents of your website easy to search with a built-in search tool. And they tell the story about how they sent someone out to a meeting, I think it was with the Washington Post. And one person described just as an engineer was like really upset about this, because saying, what's this person who meets with the Washington Post? What are they going to give them? What's this marketing person going to offer them? Like, we can't tell them that we will let you interfere with our page ranking. It has to be like natural and neutral and organic. And this person was of course, was Sundar Pichai. and that after this meeting, that on the bottom of a whiteboard, the person telling the story, that's one of the one of the first hires of the company, saying, and after this meeting, Sundar has this really meticulous handwriting that I come to call Pichai Sans, and I see written in Pichai Sans on the corner of this whiteboard, don't be evil.
That's prescient, considering episodes later. Oh my God. Back real quick to the Googlers versus Google episode. It was very interesting the way they set it up. Like, here's this audio of Sundar Pichai speaking out against when Trump had done the travel ban, and it was like the beginning of the severity, and it was just like Google came together and all their employees were like cheering them on, like, yeah, this is us, we're Google, we're doing this. And then a year later, Google employees are protesting against.
Yeah. Well, thumbs up on that's trademarked by Siskel and Ebert, but yeah, thumbs up on this podcast. This was actually Flo who brought it to my attention and suggested that we make this the inaugural book club, so to speak. But yeah, I really, thanks for recommending it because I really enjoyed it.
Well, and you know, we're always talking in Material Podcast about the stuff that we're reading, and I'm always bombarding you with links like, look, oh my God, Andy, look what I found on like Twitter or whatever, wherever I was on the internet that we need to consume. And so I thought that maybe this would be really good as sort of an after study. You know, there's so much coming out about Google. This company has been around for so long. We're still covering it. We're covering much bigger stories, I feel, than just like the device reviews and, you know, the Android updates that we were covering before. And
rumor has it that the fingerprint unlock will be underneath the screen this
which
year.
Listen, that stuff is important. Okay. It's true. Yeah, exactly. It is, but
not as interesting. I don't find it as interesting as other things.
Some people don't, and that's perfectly valid. And this stuff is also very important. And plus, this is a way for me to hang out with Andy.
Exactly.
You know, when we're not doing the podcast together,
and vice versa.
Like I'm reading and listening to this and going, I need to tell Andy about this. So
yes, I of course I have Slack installed, and 99% of it is just so that Flo and I can talk. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I hate it for every other thing. God, I hate it as much as email, TBH.
Yeah, I have the personality where it's like, oh, so you've created a new way for people to communicate with me out of the blue. That's wonderful.
Great, I'm not hyperventilating at all.
Oh, and your organization is standardizing on this, so I have to have, okay, that's great.
Okay, Andy, now it is time for us to reveal what we're going to be doing next for our book club.
It's my turn to pick, and I decided to be boring and pick an actual book. It is a brand new book from the MIT Press called Your Computer is on Fire. And I just started reading this a few days ago, and it is a wonderful book of essays and articles about basically the relationship of technology and human culture, but also the fallacy of the belief that technology is going to be the solution to all of our problems and how to create a much, much better society. Because as a lot of these essays point out, there are a lot of ways that technology has had unexpected effects, not only talking about algorithms that show bias for one demographic group and against another, but also things about how the increasing computational load of all the software and all these algorithms that we're basing our lives on have an environmental impact in the form of burning more and more and more electricity. Not all of it is renewable. So it's a good 400 pages long, but every different article, every different essay, it just has been taking me into a different idea and a different set of topics that that I had either never thought about or had thought about, but never from this point of view. So here's like part three: where will the fire spread? This is the last section. Five essays. One: coding is not empowerment. Source code isn't. Skills will not set you free. Platforms are infrastructures on fire. And by Thomas S. Mulaney, typing is dead. That's I'm looking forward to.
I gotta dive into this. I gotta get a copy. I'm gonna go find a copy of this. I am gonna leave a link in the show notes for anybody who is interested in following along with us, or you can simply wait for us to come out for the next episode and then decide then if you want to book club it with us. I'm excited, Andy. I'm excited to expand our knowledge and to just sort of finally like really dig into all these books that we've been adding to our list of things we will eventually read.
Yes. And this really was a terrific idea that Flo came up with, because I'm instantly thinking, oh wow, let's talk about this. Oh no, we can also talk about this. But also I don't like book clubs because sometimes they pick a book that I'm not really interested in. Fair. And the great thing about our book club is that you, the listener, you can come to our book club. You can get our cheap, like, rosé wine, enjoy the snacks we've laid out, and just simply nod thoughtfully. We're not going to, you don't have to pretend you read the book. Although if you read we're recommending these books because, again, we really, really dug them. But it'll be just a fun discussion between Flo and I about our experience of reading these things. So I'm really looking forward to the next one.
Well, thanks, Andy, and thanks, everyone, for tuning in. This is great. I'm excited. we're going to do more of this. Yay.
Indeed. 2021 is starting to suck less and less with each passing
just
month.
Slightly. Still don't have a vaccine.
Granted, it was not a high bar for us to scale, however.
I was going
to
say, still didn't get that prick just yet into my arm. So I'm waiting for that. And then we will be squared our way.
Yeah. If my group isn't opened up like by the end of this week, I've decided that I'm just going to show up to a center and see if uncomfortable in elevators is a medical excuse for get early inoculation.
Works for some people.
They can, if they want to say no, they can just say no. I'm not going to have a fight about it. I'm just going to say,
excuse me, sir. There's no loitering. I'm not loitering. I'm waiting for a vaccine.
You know those Hershey kisses? I can never unpeel them without like leaving a little bit of foil left and I have to like pick it off with my fingernail. Is that anything? No? Even if I agree to accept the Johnson & Johnson one? Okay. See you tomorrow.
Andy, where can people find you if they're interested in more of your work?
As usual, best places on Twitter and Instagram, where I'm Anatko on both. IHN as in Nancy, AT as in Tom, KO. And I'm also at WGBHnews.org every week talking about technology.
Perfect. Thank you, Andy.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And if you need to get in touch with me, I'm on Twitter as well and TikTok at Oh That Flow, as well as elsewhere on the social media channels. And my website is florenceio.com if you want more information about me. As for me and Andy, you can also hear us every week on the Material. You can hear us every week on the Relay FM network at the Material Podcast. We publish Thursdays typically, and we do a nice little rundown of Google News. So check us out.
Our hearts are both in the right place.
/material. Until next time, everybody.